Okay, guys. So, we've done introduction to Yerushalmi, so now we're going to turn to introduction to Agadatha, rather. So now we're going to turn to a Yerushalmi and specifically focus. It's actually not a Yerushalmi that appears in Masechet Shvi'it. It's a Yerushalmi about Shemitah. So I figured it was good. Specifically, what we're going to try to do is see an Agadatha that appears in one form in the Bavli. There's sources over here, and one form in the Yerushalmi. And while along the way, not just learn a little bit about how to learn Yerushalmi, but also, as we've done in at least my share in Iyun, how to compare and contrast halachic sugyot in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, but to do that with a goddess of the source over here. Okay, and the analysis that I'll be using is mostly from Yaffa Zilcha's book. She's written now, I think, two. She just came out with a second one. Called Be'en Agadat HaYerushalmi, where she goes through the Agadot and Yerushalmi, compares them to the Bavli, trying to show you how Yerushalmi and the Bavli have different perspectives on life, which is, you know, something I've been trying to get across in my share. Right? Right, guys? Right?
Yeah.
What? Thank you.
Yes, you.
We've been beating it to death. Right? It's just the first halacha, and we're on our ninth share on it.
Yeah. This is the ninth
share. What?
This is the ninth share.
No, on this topic that I'm doing in Morning Seder, I am on the ninth year of that topic, on one Sugya.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, very
interesting. It is a fascinating Sugya.
It is.
I don't know if you're saying that not seriously. I find it fascinating. Okay, I don't know. I find it fascinating. Okay, good. Okay. So go get food.
Where?
Okay. The last Agadatha here, we went through Ravram ben Arambam's introduction to Agadatha and all the different type of Agadot. Yeah, you can look at the link, or you can read through Ravram ben Arambam. I left the copies. I've saved them and left them in the storage room, just in case, because once I'm printing them out. Well, what? Not really. Okay, fine. So this is a version of Yerushalmi that appears in Bavli and in Yerushalmi about Shemitah. So this is how it goes in the Bavli, okay? Sorry, in the Yerushalmi first. Rebbe, now what I gave you is, on the top I gave you the Yerushalmi itself, and underneath that I gave you the Did Nefesh, which is like a modern Hebrew commentary. It's basically a rewrite of the Yerushalmi, so it's very helpful. So, Rebbe Boy Mashrei Shemitata. Rebbe wanted to permit Shemitah, meaning waive the prohibitions of Shemitah. Okay, now why would he want to do that? Now it's not clear. As the Nevi notes, it's possible because he thought Shemitah nowadays is Derabanan, and as I told my shir at some point, I know Rav Shmuel David's shir did this, but I don't think the other shirim have done it yet. There's a huge machloket about Shemitah. You're in Rav Shmuel David's shir, right?
I believe so.
Okay, so what's the machloket? Is Shemitah bizman hazeh?
Derabanan or Deraisa?
Or?
Midah.
Didn't you do this again?
Yeah,
or Midat Chassidut, which is at the Ramah Paskins. Oh my God. What did you learn yesterday? I don't know what
I
just said.
Tuesday I was gone. Tuesday wasn't there.
Or is it?
Or that, but not that. Okay, so whatever it is, let's assume for a minute possibly that what's going on is that Rebbe thought that it was Derabanan, and therefore, as we'll see, he thought that the people were poor, and it's really hard, right? Because everyone, this is the thing that we talked about in Shir also, is that people think, oh, Shemitah is good for the poor people. All the food is free. That's great, except you're also not planting it. So all the food that is probably not growing is free, right? The little that does grow is free, but not that much grows, right?
Aside from
right?
The opinion that you said that would be his.
Right? That's the problem. So he felt bad for the poor people, presumably, and he wanted to waive Shemitah. So what did he do? He wanted to get rabbinic support. So Salak Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair Ligabe. So Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair happened to be by him. So what did he do? Amar le ma iburei avidin. So, right, he wanted support from Pinchas ben Yair. Instead, Pinchas ben Yair said to him, what is all this produce in the field? Now, what does that mean? What's he saying to him? Like, yeah, right? Ulshin, right? He's mocking him. Like, what is all this stuff? Ulshin yafot, meaning implying something like, why are you so worried that you have to waive the Shemitah? There's plenty of food. There's these beautiful ulshin. Now, ulshin are not exactly human food. They are borderline human food. They're not exactly clear what they are. They might be endives or chicory. Right, Tarkiner got very annoyed at me. I translated it as endives, and he said, no, it's chicory. I'm not really sure. I don't even know what the difference is. I have literally no idea. I don't know. There are certain things I just don't know. Whatever it is. But meaning he pushed him aside. And then he said, again, Iburaya Avidin, right, Ul Shin Yafar. And again, he said, right, he asked him a question. He answered this way. V'yada Rebbe Dilet Umaskima Ime. And through the fact that Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair basically threw out different things and wouldn't talk to him about it, he realized, aha, you're ignoring me. You probably are not on board with getting rid of Shemitah Bizman Hazeh. Right? So we have Rebbe wants to get rid of Shemitah, and you are playing, you're giving me the silent treatment. Okay, that's great. Okay? Mishkach Rebbe Lemechel Imitzivchar, Batal Yoma Dain. So then what he did was he said, okay, you know what? Let's try something else. Do you want to come to my house for dinner? Okay? That's always a good way to calm things down.
Depends what you're having.
So he said to him, Amarlay, and he said, sure, I'll come for dinner. Me nachit, when he got there, Chamet mulvita dirabi kayaman. He saw that Rebbe had mules. Amar, he said, oi, kol ilen yehudoin zonin. Are all these Jews here, are they also violent, that they keep mules? Efshad lo chamisavar apoy. So I'm not going to eat with him. Goodbye.
Are mules warlike?
Apparently, yes, they are. So min kidon, azlan va'amin le'rebi. So in the meantime, Rebbe heard what happened, and Rebbe was not exactly happy that not only is he not talking to the halacha, but he is boycotting his house because he has mules. Rebbe was very wealthy, which is why he had mules. But Rebbe's not thrilled. So Shalach Rebbe by Mifayasteh. So Rebbe sent messengers to intercede and calm down Rebbe Pinchas ben Yair. So what happened? Matun begabe karte. They got to his city, and Rebbe Pinchas b'nei karti krovenly, v'nachatu b'nei kartun v'afukin aloi. And as he tried to get to the city, all the people of the city made a circle, right? They're like holding hands around Rebbe Pinchas ben Yair so no one could reach him. Okay? Yes. So then what happened? Matun, sorry, did that one? Amarlon, Rebbe by Mifayaste. But the Shlichin, the messenger said, what are you doing? Rebbe just wants to make peace. Why are you stopping us from talking to him? So they took that argument. Shivakune va'azulon. So the people said, you know, good. They left and let the messengers meet Rebbe Pinchas ben Yair. And Amar, and he said, B'nei-di-di krovenly. So then he said, okay, family, my kids, cousins, everyone, protect me. Right, make a circle. Nach then, and in the meantime, what happened? Nachta ishta min shmaya v'akaft aloi. And a fire came down from heaven and surrounded him, preventing the shlichim from talking to him. Okay, so first the city, then he tried with his family. That's not clear exactly what happened there. So instead, his support came from magic fire. Okay, so a ring of fire descends and stops them from coming. Which, what? Yeah. I wish I could do this when people were bothering me. You know, I wish. It'd be great. Azlun Amran Lerebi, so they went back and told Rebbe what happened. Amar, Hawil v'lozachina nishban minei ba'alma ha'dein nizgi mishbei minei ba'alma da'ati. Since we didn't get the honor of having dinner with him in this world, we'll have dinner with him in the next world.
Just dinner there?
Oh, whatever, Nazbiya, we'll enjoy his presence. What? You're right, it didn't mean have dinner, it meant enjoy his presence, okay? That's literally what that said. Fine, that is the Yerushalmi. Okay. So we have two things to try to figure out. One is, what does this Yerushalmi mean, and how do you figure it out? And B, as we'll see, how does the Bavli tell this story, and what is the difference? Okay, this is the story I want to analyze. It's a wonderful story. So, first of all, we got to take this line by line. I like Yafizokha's chapter here because it's really very methodical. So first of all, what's the first thing I do? If you go in order, right, what is the framing of the story? Specifically, Rebbe's attempt to be Matir Shemitah. So, first you got to figure out why. Now, why is it that all the Mefarshim assume that the reason he wanted to be Matir Shemitah is because of financial pressure? Because if you look at the next line, you see that the Reb Zera Kerebi Chatziper Avichoshir Alper Shemitah, there was once someone who was Chashud Al Shemitah, meaning he was he was suspect for not keeping the halachot. Aitunin gabe Rebbe, so they told Rebbe, that guy isn't keeping Shemitah. And you know what he said? Amar lanu ma yevin aluva ubegochayahu avad. What do you expect from him? He's working to survive. Right? Meaning, so it's clear that in Rebbe's time, people are mamish dying because there's no food during Shemitah. Right? And this is what motivates Rebbe, is that the fact that no one's planting means that people are going to basically die, if not actually die, and it bothers Rebbe. You know, it's the type of thing that should bother you. So that seems to be the background to this. So if that's the case, okay, so that means that there's a real financial duress behind this. Then what do we know about the story, right? If we follow it line by line, so therefore what do we know? Rebbe cares. Reb Pinchas ben Yair does not care. Oh, very good. Okay, hold that thought for 1 second. Reb Pinchas ben Yair doesn't care. Okay. What do we learn from this? Why is it that Reb Pinchas ben Yair doesn't care? Right? I mean, if we want to understand this Agadata, we need to understand why is it that Rebbe cares that about the poor people in this story. And Reb Pinchas ben Yair does not care about the poor people in the story. Right? Why? Okay, good. So first things first is there is food they can eat. Not necessarily human food or normally consumed human food, but there is something in the field, right? Ushin yafin, aren't those, isn't that great chicory? Yeah and no. Yes. Have you been watching the news in the last year and a half? It's like the troubles of rich people during COVID is there's a long line on, you know, the supermarket delivery. The problem with poor people is they're the people in the stores trying to sell food, right? This is not new. This is not a new problem. I'm not, by the way, this is not taking a position or anything, but obviously rich problems are usually different. I understand that from this definition we're all rich. I don't know what I can say. Well, economy, for sure, but still, right? Importing is possible. But, so one possibility, right? So one thing to pick up is that there is food, but it's not really human food. It is animal food. So since you pick up on that, I'll skip to that. Skip to number 9, right? It's divided by sections, so I can skip around, right? So in number 9, you discover that Klal Gadol Amru B'Shvi, this is a Mishnah in Shemitah that says, here's the rule in Shemitah. Kol Shehu Machal Adamu Machal Behema, anything which is human food and animal food, Umimina Tovim, and things that you use for dyes, right, for painting and coloring, Eino Mitkayim Baret, and doesn't last in the ground, Yeshlo Shvi'it, Ulo Damav Shvi'it, it has the laws of Shemitah, and its money has the laws of Shemitah. What? The next line. So, so in that context, it says, V'ez is there, what's an example, right? Zaleh haluf, fashot, v'aleh hidna, ha'ulshin, v'akrishin, right? So what is this? Right? This is in the list of things that are, right? Right, so there, right, there, no, it's like a chicory, so it's like somewhere in between, right? Like it's, right? is not only machal behema, it doesn't go into the second category, but it's also not, right, it's in the thing, which is machal adam u'machal behema, right, meaning it's, you know, right, it's somewhere in between, right? So it's clear that this is, right, to say that people can eat ulshin is really saying, like, okay, let them eat edible dog food, I don't know, right? Like, it's edible. It's like chicory, endives, something like that.
Nobody knows.
More like chicory, I think. Okay. So, why, so with that in mind, why, what do we learn about this? Why does Rabbi Nochas ben Yair, why does, thank you, why does he not care? Why would he rather people eat animal food or quasi-animal food than be makel on Shemitah? So what there might their machloket be based on? Okay, good. Very good. So Eli says one possibility, and we'll see that. And that's what Yafizilcha says. Yafizilcha says that the question here is, how much can you expect of people? Rebbe holds people to one standard, and Rebbe Pinchas ben Yair, what do we know about Rebbe Pinchas ben Yair throughout Tanakh? Yes, he holds people to a very high standard. He's known as a chassid, right? Specifically, a chassid in the context of mitzvot atzluyot baret. He's also very insistent that people have emunah. And therefore, it could be that he holds people a different standard, either because in general he's a pious person, or as Kobe said before, in a slightly different way, isn't the point of Shemitah to have bitachon? Right, to have faith in God. And if someone like Pinchas ben Yair, who is known as a chassid, who's known for having faith in God, and for known as being obsessed with mitzvot atzluy baret, right, for him, he expects a much higher standard. And Rebbe is more normal. Is more normal, right? This is every, you always need the different people. You need the people who are nice, who can temper things, right? You always need that, right? You know, you have that here. Right? You have that here, right? The reason you have as much vacation as you do is because certain people in the administration are nice. And the reason that vacation is not as long as it used to be is because I'm not that nice and I pushed Regenberg to start vacation by a little bit, right? Because vacation bothers me, right? The existence of vacation bothers me. Not by much, but...
Why?
What?
Why? Because you
anyways, because I in Talmud Ruchim Tzin who said, you know, Misha Bara Ben Azmani Matid Liten Eradin. Yeah. So one possibility of understanding this is that, yeah, the Machlokia represents two different world views, right? One which basically says, we hold people to higher standards, we expect higher emunah, we expect, especially in the context of Shemitah and Mitzvot Tzluy Baret, that's Rabbi Shimon Ben Yair. And Rebbe is more normal, right? Or more human. I don't know. Right? So why would you think? This is Yavizilcha's approach, right? That she in general thinks that Pinchas ben Yair requires of people more sacrifice. Now, how does she get this idea? So if you turn back to number four, you get it as follows. The Mishnah in Sota tells you, Reb Pinchas ben Yair Omer. Reb Pinchas ben Yair is known as a chassid, right? Therefore, he has a very famous statement attributed to him, which is Zrizut miviyah lidei nikiyut, nikiyut miviyah lidei tahara, tahara miviyah lidei prishut, right? Alacrity leads to cleanliness, leads to purity, which leads to prishut, to asceticism. Prishut miviyah lidei kedusha, which leads to holiness. Kedusha miviyah lidei anava, which leads to humility. Anava miviyah lidei yirachet, which leads to fear of sin. Yirachet miviyah lidei chasidut, that leads to piety. Chasidut miviyah lidei ruach hakodesh, which leads to having the divine spirit. Ruach hakodesh miviyah lidei tchiyat hametim, which leads to resurrecting the dead. Utchiyat hametim bal yidei Eliyahu zachor latov, amen. Okay? Right? There's a reason Mitzilat Yesharim is framed around this statement of Reb Pinchas ben Yair. Yeah?
We got a real progression.
Yes, he does.
Wow.
And it's not just that. Right? It's not that he's known as a chassid. But look at the next line in that same Mishnah, number 5. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair Omer, Mishachara ben HaMikdash, Boshu Chavirim, Uvnei Chorin. When the ben HaMikdash was destroyed, he said, friends, be embarrassed, and free ones, the Chafu Rosham, cover your head, the good people, they're gone, and the evil ones have taken over. There's no hope. The only thing we do is rely on God, right? He is the paradigm. He is a chassid, and he says, the world is ending, rely on God, right? The end is nigh, right? That's his personality, right? Now, so at some level, right, as Eli said and as Kofi both said, it could just be that what it's teaching here is showing two worldviews. Rebbe, who understands how normal people work, and Reb Pinchas ben Yair, who is a chassid, right? A chassid. A very, right? Now, but it's more than that. It's more than that. He is so obsessed with this that he's also known as a miracle worker, and his piety explicitly expresses itself in the context of Mitzvah Atluyed Baretz, in a very celebrated story, which appears both in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, and that is the magic donkey of Reb Pinchas ben Yair, right?
Wait, he had a donkey?
No, he had his mule. Different. Different. But he had magic donkeys who kept mitzvot, right? So if you look at 6, right, you know this, look at 6. So if you look at 6, guys, look at 6. So Pinchas ben Yair was traveling, and someone gave barley to his donkey, and he wouldn't eat it. So he kept, right, trying, hitting him, breathing it, whatever. Didn't give it to him. So finally, Amar Lehu, Pinchas ben Yair said to the guy who was trying, you know, the innkeeper, Dilma Loma Asran, maybe the reason my animal is not eating the food is because you didn't give meiser. You didn't tithe the food. Asrinu, so he gave my master ba'achal, and he ate it. So Amar, aniyadu holechad lasad raton konev, ata machil, and I was following him, and he yelled at him, and he said, this animal, this poor animal, wants to do what God wants, and you dare to feed him untithed produce? Right, you understand, there's a personality that's developing here, right? You know, okay? And then the Gemara says, I don't understand. Umi machayfa? What are you, crazy? Is he obligated? V'hatnan. But the Mishnah says, halokeach l'zera ulebei ma'avekemach l'orot, if you take something for, if you take seeds for animals, patur mehadzimai. Right? He's patur. Like, animals, you can give it to the animal. So then the Gemara answers, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mo'al Shana, Shlachan Mitchila Lebehema. Avalachan Mitchila Adam, Nimachan Lebehema, Chayv La'aser. He says, yeah, but if you first thought you were going to give it to people and then change your minds, Inachanami, you have to give Meiser. Va'atani Elokech Be'erot Min Ashuk La'achila, V'nimachan Lebehema, Reza Lo Yitin Lilov Nibin Lo Lebehema, Lebehema, Chavero, Elem Kein Yiser, right? Fine. But what you see here is that it's not just that he happens to be a chassid. We know that he has a particular affinity to expressing that piety in Mitzvot Atluyed Baretz, even if that means his donkey is a magic donkey that only eats, that knows when food has not been tithed, right? Or as you have in number 7 in the Yerushalmi version of it goes like this. Rabbi Abba Bar Zamina b'shem Rabbi Ze'era, Amar in Avod Kadmai b'nei Malachim Anu b'nei Nash. If the original generations, you've probably heard this before, right? If the original generations were angels, so we are people, right? V'in Havun b'nei Nash, and if the original generations were human beings, Chamorim, we are donkeys, right? As one of my Rebbeim, Rabbi Clapper, always liked pointing out, this is clearly partially a joke. If you don't appreciate that this is meant to be humorous, then you just don't understand what's going on. He just said, imagine, it's very simple. Imagine right now, right, okay, all close your eyes, imagine that Rabbi Ginsburg gets up tonight to give a sicha, and he says, if last year's students in Migdal were angels, then you're human beings. And if they're human beings, then you are donkeys. But not regular donkeys, not even magic donkeys. You are regular donkeys. And let me tell you a story about a magic donkey, right? There might be Musser there, but...
Magic donkeys?
Yes, you don't, that's right. You don't even get to be magic donkeys. You are a regular right.
You eat the untied
exactly. So that's the context here. So Amar Rabbi Mana by Ishaita Amrin, at that time Afil Hamarti Rav Pinchas ben Yair, Lo Adimun, you're not even the donkey of Rav Pinchas ben Yair. Why? Because Hamarti Rav Pinchas ben Yair, Guvna Leste Balayla, it's more elaborate here. He was stolen by thieves at night. The donkey. Avadit mura givan plata yomin gelota in klum. And for 3 days, he wouldn't eat anything, right? So, batar plata yomin it malkon mechzarte lomara. So at some point, they gave up, and they said, there's no point to have a donkey, he's going to starve to death. And they returned the stolen donkey back to Pinchas ben Yair. Nishalcha lomara de lelemut legaban. And they said, look, we'll send it back to the masters rather than having it die by us. Vechitze ma'arta. And then our lair will stink from a dead donkey. Apkuna azlat v'kamt altare demara. So they did, and they brought it back. It went back home. Shuryat minhaka, and it started braying. Amarlon patchen lahade aluvta did leitzatin yomid lo timet klum. And they said, open the door for this poor donkey who hasn't eaten in 3 days. Patchen lahad v'alud la. So it came home, and Amarlon, you haven't loklum. And they said, did you feed it anything? So they said, Yahavun, right now he's talking to the thieves. Yahavun kum esarim lo bayit meichal, right? We gave him barley, right? This story is even better, right? Because now it's not an innkeeper, it's the thieves who are so desperate. They come and say, why is it that your stolen donkey refused to eat in our lair? So Amarlon, and we gave him food, barim and demai. And he says, but it was demai. Right, meaning suffix truma. It's not even tevel. It's something that might have had truma given. Amru leiv elokin alfen rebbe. Right, again, these are the thieves. Wait a second, but isn't the halacha that alokeh lezeru lebehema v'lora lekshemin lener lazuwa dekelim patim in demai? But if I'm giving to an animal, isn't the halacha right? Yes, the very learned robbers. Amr Lan. I think it's at his students at this point. There could be the robbers. Not really quite clear. Ma'navid la alavda de mechamer al garmei. He said, what can I do? My donkey is very machmir. And alasa, va'arim un damien va'achilut. And he gave him food and eat, right? So what you learn about Rav Pinchas ben Yair is a certain pattern. In yet another story, if you write in Demai and Aleph Gimel, you get the following story: the Repenchas ben Yair, Ave Ozel ben Avad, Ave Gingagvir Halach Ginigvir. He was once going to the Beis Medrash, the Beit Avad, the meeting place, and there was a river. So what did he do? Amarle Ginid Maad Manalim in Beit Vada. He just yelled at the river and said, "What are you doing? Why are you stopping me from going to where I need to go?" Upalukumoy, and it split. So it split. Vavar, he split the sea, and he went. Amarle Talmidim Yochlan on an Afrin, and his Talmidim said to him, "This is number 8." And they said, so the Talmidim said, "Can we also come?" Right, like there's an ocean. The sea is like split. Can we go through? And he said, Amarlon man liyata dinashi lo akil levarnash min Yisrael min yomei yavor velo menakeh. Only if you know that you've never embarrassed a Jew in your entire life. Otherwise, don't bother. Right? So what we learn about Pinchas ben Yair is that he is a chassid with extremely high standards, right? To the extent that no one else can live up to it. Right? Right? No one can even live up to the standard of his animals. Right? And he's obsessed with Mitzvot Lubar and Bitachon. Right? So, one way of reading this machloket is that the machloket is fundamentally a worldview machloket, where Pinchas ben Yair is like, everyone should have this emunah, everyone should trust in God, everyone should, right? And Rebbe is like, that's very nice for Pinchas ben Yair, but that's not how things work, right? And what the Yerushalmi is trying to do is pose two worldviews here. That's one possibility, okay? Now, if you just go back for a second to number 3, you'll see that, in fact, the Pnei Moshe, right, he does read this story that basically, he said Machloket is slightly different. That Rebbe even cared about people who didn't necessarily keep halacha in the best way. Right? Rebbe Pinchas ben Yair, as we see, doesn't even care, right? He wants his animal to be machmir. He b'chol doesn't care that someone who might not keep halacha is going to have food, right? That's one way of reading it. The Alei Tamar, Yisachar Tamar, is another possibility, which is not mutually exclusive. But he says it could be that the Machloket is also, or maybe exclusively, a halachic one, namely, is Shemitah Bizman Hazeh biblical or not? Because if it's biblical, the standards of what we demand are higher. If it's rabbinic or minhag or mizvah chassidut, right, the standards are lower. So it may be that it's not just a hashkafic machloket, it's also a halachic machloket. One second. Right, so that I gave you that if you want to read inside in number 10. Okay, so that's the first half of the story. But then what does Rebbe do? Rebbe says, okay, well, can we at least have dinner together? Okay, we have opposing halachic views, world views. Can we please have dinner together? And this is where you discover that there's more that meets the eye. Because let's say this is just a halachic machlokas.
Right.
So presumably, Rav Pinchas ben Yair would say, no, I think it's dal reis, I think it's asr, whatever, right? But I can eat at your house. Instead, what do you get? He says, oi, this guy has mules. I'm running away. And then he sends messengers. No, townspeople, protect me. Oh, that doesn't work. Fire from heaven. Right? I mean, this is quite extreme. I mean, look, it's not like I always want to talk to people, but like, yeah, this is a shtickle. This is like, it's not just ghosting someone. This is like, you know, right, you know. So what's going on here? So Yavin Zohar points out that, right, what's going on here clearly is that part of the problem here is that, listen, Rabbeinu ben Yair's worldview really doesn't work with rabbis, because besides for Rebbe being willing to be makil, there's other things he doesn't like about Rebbe, such as Rebbe is phenomenally wealthy, right? This doesn't work with a uber chassid of Rav Pinchas ben Yair's aesthetic, right? He's an aesthetic, right? He has a problem, not just with Rebbe's psak, but everything that Rebbe represents, right? This is a problem. But here Yafet Zelchad does something very interesting. He says, okay, well, why does Yerushalmi tell you that at first all the people surround Rav Pinchas ben Yair to protect him, but then when the people in the city, when the messengers explain to the people in the city what's going on, they leave? Right, so she says that because, remember, if what we're saying is true, there's a machloket here where Rebbe is a man of the world. He understands people, and Rav Pinchas ben Yair is not. So they have a lot of respect for him, right? He's a big tzaddik. But when people explain what's going on, right, it could just be, okay, they just leave. But it could also be that what do they hear? Rebbe is trying to be makil. Rebbe, here's your situation, right? And Rav Pinchas ben Yair stormed out on him, right? And they say, you know, it might be good for Rebbe people to get a chance to talk to Rav Pinchas ben Yair. And then what does he have to do? Right? Because Rav Pinchas ben Yair's worldview doesn't work for the average person. So how does the Yerushalmi explain what's about to happen? What's his only recourse? Right? Fire from heaven, meaning that's exactly the point, is that Rebbe represents a reasonable worldview for people. And when people abandon Rav Pinchas ben Yair because they really can't handle it, his only recourse is basically say, okay, but I have a direct connection to God, and, you know, you do what you want, right? And that's what she thinks is going on here, right? Now, again, it could just be that they also have respect for Rebbe, and that's why they back down. Now, in the Bavli, right, so there's a little bit more. So if you look at 11, in the Bavli continues, and Shama Rebbe Nafak La'ape, Amarle Rizon Chatzoretzli, right, he said, you want to come have dinner with me? Amarle Hain, he said, I'll come dinner. Sababanav Sharebi, Amarle, oh, he was so happy. Amarle Benuminat, there's Shemudra Anam Yisraelani, he said, why are you so happy? What, do you think I never get benefit from other Jews? What, do you think I've forsworn benefit from Jews? Why are you so happy? I'm coming to have dinner with you. Yisrael Kedoshim Hain, Yesh Rote V'Ein Lo, V'Yesh Yesh Lo, V'Ein Rote, Uktiv, Al Tilchem Et Lechem Rab, Ayin val tadul matam otav, ki chmo sar ben afsho, kein hu, sar ben afsho, kein hu, achol v'shato, yom lecha v'libo, v'limach, v'atar, atar, rotsa v'yesh lecha. Right, he said, listen, there are some people who have, there's some people who don't have. You have, and you want to offer, so I'll come, but I'm busy, I just got to finish something, I'll come later for dinner. Okay, I got to go deal with a mitzvah. Next one. Ki ata itrami abu pitcha, but when he got there, davu kaimin bu kandunayta chavarta, amar malach hamamud v'veitze shalzeh. Here it's more extreme. He sees the white mules, and he, instead of just saying, he has mules, he says, the malach hamavet is here. The angel of death is here. V'ani edetzlo, esodetzlo, I should eat by him. Shama Rebbe Nafik L'Ape, Amr Le Mizav Nina Lehu, Amr Le Mizav Iver Lotitin Mechshol. He said, I'll sell them. I'll sell them. I'll get rid of my mules. He says, no, Lifnei Iver. Right? You'll be giving them over to someone else who will sin. Mefkarnalu, he said, I'll give it away. I'll throw them out. Said, Mafash Ha'ezekah. But then they're just going to go around and damage. Akarnaluhu, I will hamstring them so they can't walk. He says, no, ikatsar balechayim, then you're causing pain to animals. Katil niluhu, I will kill them. He says, ikabaltashes, oh, it's wasteful. Hame kamad mejveduva, kamadu rebeinayu. Right, in the meantime, like, it's, you know, he just gave up and like a mountain fell between them, right? Bacha rebi v'amar, ma b'chayein kach, memitazan al achat kama v'kama. I said, if this is what happens, right, like a mountain falls down to like separate us, if this is like in his lifetime, right, so when he dies, when tzaddikim are even greater, right, the Amar Bichama Gdolim tzaddikim tzaddan yosem rebichayen, shnem rebim kovrim ish, right, etc., right, alcha kama kama, right, how much greater is going to be in the world to come? Now, what is the point of that? So first of all, what do you see again? Right, Rebbe is clearly, it's praise, which is not praise. What is he saying? He's saying he's already in the next world, right? In this world, he's like that. My God, what is he like in the next world, right? Which is like a compliment and not a compliment, right? It really emphasizes how there's two worldviews. Okay, so we clearly have in this story, right, what it seems to be is that the Yerushalmi is constructing not just a localized halachic machlokes, but a perspective about wealth and poverty and need and bitachon and how much can be expected from normal human beings and setting up two paradigms. But then Yafet Zilcha says, okay, but is there a difference between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi? And she thinks there is. And she says, first of all, in the Yerushalmi, how central is the fact that Rebbe is wealthy to the story? Not so much. It's a side point, right? Meaning he happens to be wealthy, right? How about in the Bavli? Is it main point or is it central or side point? It's central. Right? Because when he's invited, what does Rav Chiya say? There are people who have and want to share. There are people who don't have but want to share but nothing to share. You're wealthy. You want to share, right? I'm happy to come to you. Meaning, he draws attention to the fact that Rebbe is wealthy and he's not. Right? This seems to be central. And it's not just mules. What is it? It emphasizes what type. It's not just the violent animal, which is what you have in the Yerushalmi, but what is it? It's the white ones, right? Which are wealthy.
Wait, is he trying to make fun of Rebbe that he should escape?
So, good. So what she argues is that in the Yerushalmi, right, this is two different worldviews, right? The pietist versus the everyday man. In the Yerushalmi, in the Bavli, in addition to that, it's something else, which is, it's a fight about wealth. Right, and wealthy lifestyles, where there's a subtext going on, where it's not just that Pinchas ben Yair is a pietist and Rebbe is not, it's that Pinchas ben Yair is, what is he implying? The reason you are the way you are, and you're willing to do the things you do, is because you're so rich. You're so rich. You don't know what it means to sacrifice. You think that this is hard. Why? Because people will have to eat not the best food. You're willing to make ill? Well, that's because you do, right? But me, right? Right? It sounds like there's more of a critique, not just of different worldviews, but that Pinchas ben Yair is coming in and saying, your worldview comes because you're wealthy, because you're spoiled, right? Now, the irony, of course, that he's saying people should eat animal food when his animals eat like human beings, right, in terms of halakhic things, right? Obviously, I think that irony is part of the story, right? Which is in terms of quality, we can only eat animal food. But when it comes to, we can eat animal food, but with a badat, you know, hashgacha, you know, like the irony there is, it jumps out at you, right? It's like, it's not about the quality of the food, right? It's like, you know, this always bothers me a little bit that, like, every so often, from my house, there, I can either go to Rami Levy, right, which is like a big supermarket in the area, which basically is the supermarket for like Gush Etzion and for a lot of the Arab communities in the area. And Gush Etzion in general is a bit of a middle to upper middle class, let's say. Or I could go about equidistant to Beitar, right, which is a very Haredi city and also happens to be lower on the socioeconomic scale. Okay? Many things, therefore, in Beitar are cheaper, right? Except for meat. Why? Because it has 200 hechsherim, right? 200 hechsherim, right? There you go, and the whole thing is covered in hechsherim and costs money.
Are you vegetarian?
No. But it happens sometimes, right? Meaning that he's saying, listen, it's not... He's willing to live a more modest lifestyle. The only time he's willing to be, right, machmir, right, is not on quality, but on frumkeit, right? It's a different worldview, right? And then what happens? You get this amazing discussion where what does Rebbe say? Right, that Rebbe, right, basically says, okay, I'll get rid of the animals. You have a problem with my animals? Fine. But that's not really what's going on. Right? Rebbe Pinchas Ben Yair, right, either says, listen, right, you don't understand. Like, you can't get rid of them. Either you had no right to be this situation in the first place. Or, now you have it, but they're a gift from God. And you can't just, right, meaning, there's a difficult situation here. So what Yaakov Zilcha very nicely notes is, as much as there's a similarity between the stories, and both stories of Kim Machloket about worldview, the question is, what is the world? What are they arguing about? Even though it has almost all the same features in the story, right? The slight details show you the Bavli and the Yerushalmi actually see the focus as different, right? The Yerushalmi sees it seemingly fundamentally about the way what they think you can demand of other people, as opposed to in the Bavli, where the central Machloket is. What do you think wealth does to your ability to perceive the proper way of going forth in the situation? Where Rebbe, right, is a worldly person, and Pinchas Meir, I think that's the problem, right? So they tell almost the same story, and yet the machloket, the different worldviews that they want to sharpen are actually different, right? Is it a machloket about how much can we expect from people, or is it a machloket about, right, what type of person you need to be, right, in order to judge the situation better? Correct. Now, obviously, these overlap, right? But what she notes is that even when you're telling the story where there's clearly overlap, right, changing slight details or even ordering it differently or slight different choices, right, change the focus of what the message is, right? Where in the Bavli, it's giving you a worldview of, right, what it looks like to understand where people are coming from and what it looks like not to. Again, it doesn't necessarily paskin, right, so to speak, right? Where in the Yerushalmi, it's arguing about wealth. Right, and different perspectives on wealth and what it does to you. Right, again, obviously they're related. Obviously they're related. Right, but they're still framed differently. Now, another possibility she argues is that another part of the machlokes might be that, as we've seen, Rebbe is more of a, you know, your normal this worldly personality. Pinchas Ben Yair, as we've seen, also has miracles happening. So part of their machloket might also be to what extent it's legitimate to rely on miracles. Why would you think that? So she points that, look at the Tarat Kohanim. The Tarat Kohanim says as follows, Ushchavtem v'ein macharid. And here it's not Pinchas Ben Yair, but it's his Rebbe. It's Rebbe Shimon versus right, Rebbe Yehuda. So you see like his Beit Midrash. So he says, "Lo yirimi kol bria." What it'll mean that you won't be afraid of any, right, of anything. You won't be afraid of any animals. The hishavti chayar ramin aretz. Yehuda omer ma'aviram mina ulam. Yehuda says, "I will kill all the right. There won't be dangerous animals." Reb Shimon Omer Mishivatan Shelo Yizoku. Yeah, like or when the Jews are good and God is taking care of us. So there's a machlokes. What does it mean you won't be afraid of wild animals? Rabbi Yehuda says there won't be wild animals. Rabbi Shimon says there will be, but their nature will change and they will be calm. Amar Rabbi Shimon, "Matay yishiv choshel makom? Bizman she'ein mazikin bo, bizman she'ish mazikin ve'en mazikin. Amar bizman she'ish mazikin ve'en mazikin. Chenom is marshir liyom haShabbat, l'mashbid mazikin min alam, shivan shelo yizoko." And he says, well, which is, right, what is a bigger miracle? Right? Not having wild animals or having wild animals that are calm? Right? Now, right, this might be part of the story also where Rebbe, what does Rebbe say in our Gemara? What's the best way to deal with the wild animals? Get rid of them, hamstring them, and what does Rebbe Levin Yair always say? No, you can't do that, you can't do that, you can't do that, but why might he be arguing about that? Because there might be a secondary machloket going on here. Rebbe says, listen, there's a problem, so we do the best we can. Right? I can't own them, I'll give them away. No one should own them? Fine, I'll kill them. Right? Right? Meaning he's working within. Right? What's the, right, in that stage of the Gemara, what does Rebbe seem to be functioning as? What's his solution to problems? Human solutions. Right? And what is Rebbe Pinchas ben Yair? Right? Meaning, remember, Rebbe Pinchas ben Yair leaves him no options. You can't kill them, you can't keep them alive, you can't give them away, you can't harm them. Right? But it could be that, why is he so insistent? Because there's another machloket going on. Now, once we finish the Shemitah machloket, there's another machloket, which is it legitimate to rely on miracles? Right? Where Rebbe says, right, just like in the Torah Kohanim, Rebbe says, how will there not be wild animals? You get rid of them. And Rebbe Shimon, who's Rebbe Pinchas ben Yair's Rebbe, says, no, there will be wild animals, and you miraculously make them calm. Right? That may not have been the type of thing that Rebbe can entertain. Right? So it could be there's another machloket going on here, which is, right, Toch Kedei, that it's not just that he caught him. Is that they're really arguing about, right, are you allowed to rely on miracles? Where Rebbe says, no, so here's my solutions. And Pinchas ben Yair says, none of those solutions are perfect. But he doesn't tell you what his solution is. But once you know that his Beit Midrash thinks solution is miracles, there may be a secondary machloket here, which is the role of miracles. So that's another layer to this story. The last layer to the story, I gave you a summary here at the end, coming back to the question of pressuring to eat in his home. So, one of the questions you need to have in this Gemara is, okay, the Gemara presents different worldviews, but does it take sides? Right? Meaning until now we've just said there are different worldviews that the Gemara is illustrating, but does it take sides? Here she argues that there is small indications that the Gemara is taking sides in favor of the more human perspective of Rebbe. And she points to a few. One is the fact that the verb used is maftir, which means he put a lot of pressure. Meaning, Rebbe was really trying, right? It's emphasizing he's trying, and when someone is maftir, like he puts a lot of pressure and you say no, right? It's because you're stubborn. Right? So it's presenting Rebbe Pinchas ben Yair as stubborn, and Rebbe as someone who's really trying to make amends, right? The second is that statement that we saw at the end, that the Rebbe says he's great, but he's great, like, greater in death than life, right? By letting Rebbe get the last word, right, where he's basically saying he is a great person, but, you know, he'll be, like, he's from the next world, right? It does seem to be allowing Rebbe to have that last word, where he's great, and I appreciate, and you should understand his worldview, but Rebbe gets the last word. She does note that even if you think that Rebbe gets the upper hand, does he get the upper hand entirely, or is there still a conversation? So she notes that in the Yerushalmi, right, clearly what's the maskana? These two worlds views are irreconcilable, right? Right? Fire swirling around. In the Bavli, right, again, even though it ends with Rebbe saying he's from another world, right, it's not shlichim. It's not that Rebbe sent messengers. They went to another city, tried to get in, were surrounded by fire. They're talking to each other, meaning they're in dialogue, right? So she does note that subtly the Yerushalmi is saying, listen, these are worldviews and they're never going to be reconciled. And the Bavli is saying there are different worldviews and maybe Rebbe has a slight advantage, but as hard as it is, right, they're in conversation at some level, right? So she notes that if you pay attention to the nuance, both say there are different worldviews. both seem to give slight preference to Rebbe, right? The more humanist one or of this world. But the Bavli and Yerushalmi differ in how much that's true, right? And whether you're supposed to view these worldviews as things that can both be part of your life or, right, two different worldviews where, like, one exists, but, like, you pick one or the other, and those are not, it's not that you meet somewhere in between, even if it's sort of uncomfortable. The last point she notes, and this is very important to realize in general, is that often the Yerushalmi, when it tells stories, it focuses in on the real life problems in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because it's happening in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, you remember that in the Yerushalmi, this story happens where? In Israel, with Rebbe looking on and saying, Oy Gavalt, the people are in pain, right? But in the Bavli, right, like that eventually sort of falls away, right? It's more like, right, it's not Rebbe looked at the field, saw people, right? They start getting into, right, more general machloket, right? There's so much more time is given to exactly what to do with the donkeys, right? And she argues there's a very simple reason for this, which is that even if the story is being retold in Bavel, and it's basically the same story, the people are telling the story 100 years later in Bavel, Mitzvot Tluya Baaretz are no longer, right, they don't have Mitzvot Tluya Baaretz. And therefore, when the Bavli retells the story, because remember, as we talked about, remember we saw Rambam ben Rambam, that many Agadot, there's a historical core, but it's retold in a way that teaches a lesson. So you're saying in Bavel, the exact parameters of what led to this dispute is less important, because what's more important is showing different worldviews, because Mitzvot Tluya Baaretz aren't practical for them. But in Yerushalmi, the whole point of this discussion is that people were actually suffering, right? And Rebbe and Rebbe Pinchas and Yair took actual different opinions on how to deal with the people. And therefore, she notes that one of the things you always have to look for is that even when you're telling basically the same story, the Bavli may reframe it, especially Mitzvot Tluya Baaretz, to tease out the lessons that are more generic, whereas in the Yerushalmi, it's legitimate to focus the lessons specifically in the context of Mitzvot Tluya Baaretz because it's real, right? Okay, so those are just, I think, some perspectives to look at on how to read, right, how to read Agadata, right, where you have to figure out what's going on, right, what is it trying to represent. Even, again, this is not one of those stories that some version of couldn't have happened, right, but clearly the way it's being told is also teaching you a lesson, and you have to be careful to read each line, figure out what it's telling you, and as she notes, note that just because a story is repeated in similar ways in Bavli and Yerushalmi doesn't mean that they aren't getting at different points, right? Because again, if you hold like a Rambam and a Rambam, that Agadotas will sometimes have historical cores, but they'll be retold differently, you should expect that in different places where the lessons that need to be taught are different, right, it's going to be retold with just enough nuance, right, to shape it in the way that community needs to hear. Okay? Fine.